All right, Parashas Vayetze. So let's start at page 152. What I'd like to do this afternoon, something as I was thinking about what to prepare in terms of saying, there was something that I've always been interested in and never spent a lot of time looking into, but I did a little bit more for this morning. I want to go through the names of the tribes, just sort of go through as the Torah records each one of their births. Interestingly, as the Torah does very often, when a child is named in the Torah, we find a reason given for the name, and certainly here, by the naming of the 12 tribes, each one of them has a story behind it. So, let's go through a little bit. Let's go through some of the stories behind the name, so to speak, as we take the Chumash through the travels of Rachel and of Leah, and then of the two maidservants, Bilhah and Zilpah, and learn a little bit about what Rashi and the Ramban, and of course the Maharal, have to say about that. So let's start. We'll start here. We're in the middle of the story. So the backdrop of the story, which you are all familiar with, Yaakov runs away in the beginning of the parasha from his brother Esav, whom he had stole the brachos from at the end of last week's parasha. He's on his way to Haran to his uncle Lavan, his mother's Rivka's brother, who is Lavan. And on the way at the well, he meets Rachel, Lavan's daughter, who is shepherding the sheep, and he, of course, desires to marry her. They go back to Lavan's house, and Lavan says, no problem, 7 years, work for her, which he does. And then, of course, as we know, the switch under the chuppah, instead of marrying Rachel, he ends up marrying Leah. 7 days later, he marries Rachel, and then has to complete the work for another 7 years for on behalf of Rachel. So he worked for first 7 years for Leah, gets married, waits a week, marries Rachel on credit, so to speak, and then works the next 7 years to pay off that debt. No comment. No comment about the concept of the debt. Again, no comment. Okay, that's where we basically are. So we end up having the two wives. Each one of the wives brings with her a shivcha, a maidservant, a Bilhah and Zilpah. And the Torah then begins to describe the story. So the first pasuk, I'm just flipping around here while I'm talking, not paying attention to what I'm doing, so I'm not able to find where I want to be. Okay, let us start on with pasuk Lamed. Pasuk Lamed, verse 30, chapter 29. We will pick up our story and learn what there is to learn as the story develops. So the Torah says as follows: Vayavo gam el Rachel, vayehav gam es Rachel. So he marries Rachel. He loves Rachel even more than Leah, and he works another 7 years for Leah. This is where our story picks up. Says the Chumash, verse 31, Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Vayar Hashem ki snua Leah, vayiftach es rachma v'Rachel akara. Hashem sees. Hashem saw. In other words, the Torah describes this process as a vision that Hashem saw that Leah was unloved. So he opened her womb, and Rachel remained barren. So it seems that both of them were initially barren, as all the imahos, all of the matriarchs of the Jewish people, began their lives barren. Sages say about Sarah, for example, that she physically did not even have a womb, and that all of their children were born miraculously. As the sages have said in the oft-quoted statement that Hashem desires the prayers of the righteous, so he creates a situation in which they do not have children. I'll parenthetically mention, just because I was speaking about this with somebody just on Sunday, Sunday was the carnival at our day school for children, the pre-chan. The middle school girls put on a little preschool carnival for little kids every the month before Hanukkah sometime. So I was there at the carnival, and as all of you have been to these carnivals, it's usually very loud and busy, and kids are running and screaming. So a friend of mine was holding his 2-year-old son in his arms, and the 2-year-old was really like wrapped around, his neck, as 2-year-olds often do in those situations. So I hadn't necessarily noticed it. My friend said to me, "I love bringing him to events like this. I love it. He gets so scared, and he snuggles up against me in a way that I can never get him to do otherwise." That's what he said to me. So I told him, I said, "What you're doing right now is you're acting with your tzelem Elohim, with the fact that you were created in the image of God. You are acting in a divine and godly way, because Hashem does this to us all the time also. Because he knows it's only when we're scared that we cuddle up to him in a way that we'll never otherwise cuddle up to him. So you want to know why we end up in these situations where we sometimes, like, why is this happening? Because our reaction when it happens is we call out and we cuddle up with the Creator in a way that we're just not able to do otherwise. So just like a parent who takes his child to a carnival because he knows that the kid's going to latch onto him in a way that's so geschmack, but you can't get the kid to do it otherwise, Hashem does that to us all the time. And the trick is, make sure you snuggle up, because that's why it's happening. It's happening because just like a parent desires that hug from the kid, Hashem desires that hug from us as well. And if we do it on our own, great. But when we don't, so we get brought to a carnival and we get all frightened. And it only occurred to me, because that thought had occurred to me a couple years ago as well, when I was just playing around with my kids in the house, and I would do the same kind of thing, right? Like push them back, they're on my lap, and I'd push them back so that they think they're going to fall over, and you know, they would jump back, and I said the same thing to my wife after that. So when he told that to me at the carnival, it's such a truism that there's a certain, you know, you put me in this place because you want me to, that hug, you love it. So Hashem does that. So Hashem, the sages say Hashem desires the prayers of the righteous. So how does Hashem get that snuggling in from the righteous? So they were barren. All the matriarchs were barren, would create that amount of prayer, and that caused that. So all the books, all the svarim on tefillah, on prayer, all say that if we would only daven correctly beforehand, we would never have all of the problems that befall us and the Jewish people. All of those problems are to get us to react in the way that we do, and we all react in the appropriate way. We call out to Hashem, we have prayer gatherings, and we daven with more kavana, and we add all sorts of things to our day. If we would do that before, we wouldn't need that. But we sometimes forget. Someone said to me, just speaking, we should mention Ira, as we're on his way to Levi, Mr. Hashem, in a few hours. Someone said in the office, why does Hashem have to always remind us that things are, that everything in our life is held in His hands? So I said, because He always has to remind us, because we forget. I mean, you answered the question yourself. Why is He always reminding us? Because we need reminders. If we would walk around and feel that you read Tehillim, you read the Psalms, you read the way David HaMelech understood, he got it. If we would work towards that, where we would walk with that sense of belief and trust and concept that there is a Creator, you know, I'm not saying nothing would ever happen. I'm not in control. I don't know how God runs the world. But the response to why these things happen, yeah, they're reminders to us. Then we, you know, the least that we can do is get the message. You know, it's not explaining why it happened. I'm not saying why it happened to him. I'm just saying there's a message when these things happen.
Your particular friend, when the child grabs him, so it's not good for him to say, don't be afraid. He wants
right.
the hugs. So
absolutely, right. He doesn't want to say, no, don't be afraid, right?
That.
It's when exactly.
You tell a child, don't be afraid, you shouldn't tell him.
And no, it's such a powerful example, such a powerful muscle as to what really is going on. We don't want the child, we don't want to push a child. We like that situation. I just want the child to do that in every situation, not only when he's scared, but I'm not interested in pushing him and telling him to do it on your own. Right? That's the worst situation, when the child says, no, I don't care about you. That's, you know, you're missing the whole point. All right, in any case, back to our story. So Hashem sees, verse 31, Hashem sees that Leah literally was hated. Now, Artscroll is generous, and they translated it as Hashem saw that Leah was unloved. Generous. The word in Hebrew is snua. The word is hate. Now, we'll see the commentators have what to say on that word. But just the word in Hebrew that was used by the Chumash is a harsh word. That Hashem saw that Leah was hated. So Hashem opened up her womb, and Rachel remained in her barren state. Now this verse, before we get to the actual naming of the children, really presents the backdrop of the first three of the children that Leah is going to have, and the names that she gives them. So it's an important verse to understand. The Ramban offers two opinions as to how this happened, so to speak. Why was it, or an explanation of this concept that Leah was A, hated, and B, that Hashem saw, the way that the Torah describes it, Hashem saw that she was hated. So he presents two approaches, one from the Radak, one of the classic commentators, and one of his own. The Radak says as follows. The Radak is a little bit more generous than the Ramban. The Radak says, whenever you have two wives, or two of anything, and one is significantly more desired than the other is always, by definition, relative to the primary one, considered snua. So that that would be certainly room for Art Scroll to say she wasn't hated. But that wasn't a hate. It was that there are two wives. He clearly loved and was more interested in Rachel more than Leah. So in every other situation of the two, and one is significantly more desired than the other, even though there's nothing negative towards the other, it's just that in relation to the first, which I so much have positive feelings towards, that second one is considered or viewed almost as a snua. Therefore, says the Radak, Chaisa Busho Badavar, it was embarrassing almost. It was a sort of, she wasn't really sure how to handle that, Leah, that it was so clear that Rachel was the more loved of the wife. V'ro'o Elokim es Anya. So Hashem saw her affliction. He saw the pain and suffering that she was going through because of the fact that that Rachel was so much more loved, and therefore he saw that, opened up her womb, and she had children, as we'll see in the next couple of verses. That's the Radak's approach to the translation of Snua. It's not a real hatred. Chas v'sholom, it's simply that she was so much less loved than Rachel. In relation, it seemed almost that way, or would be considered that way. Hashem saw that embarrassment that she suffered because of that, and granted her a child. The Ramban is a little bit more harsh. The Ramban says, Leah is not innocent, or free from guilt in this entire episode. When Lavan comes and switches her for Rachel, so Leah didn't say anything. Leah did not tip Yaakov off that she wasn't really Rachel. She went along with the signs that Rachel had given her, so that it's not till the next morning that Yaakov discovers that this is not the intended wife that he had had. So says the Ramban, Yaakov had tainas, Yaakov had complaints against Leah for deceiving him. Lavan for sure deceived him, but that Leah went along, says the Ramban, and even if Kibud Av, honoring her father and not embarrassing him publicly under the chuppah by, you know, calling out that, no, the whole thing is a at least, and there should have been some sort of sign, some sort of communication personally to Yaakov. So says the Ramban, Hayulova Hagido Lirmos, she should have either told him or at least hinted at the fact that she was Leah. Ulefikach, he didn't recognize her until the morning. Ulechein, son of Yaakov. That's why Yaakov disliked her. Yaakov had complaints. He had something against her that she went along with this and did not tell him what was going on. Yeah.
So, Rabbi, if you look at the culture of these people and you see that who Laban is and how he values money and how he's willing to kill, I would like to defend her and say that he may have killed her. Because for him, it's another 7 years of free labor and prosperity, and she may have feared for her life.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm just saying over the Ramban. I don't know.
Because to respect the father to such a level means maybe she was afraid of him.
So the Ramban, again, I'm the Ramban held that Yaakov had complaints against Leah for going along with this and not in any way letting him know what was going on. And he brings a proof from the Medrash. The sages say as follows. Kevan shiro'a Yaakov ma'asim. When Yaakov saw what she did, shirom sa Leah ba'achoysa, how she deceived her sister, and nasan daito legarsha, he had intentions of divorcing her. The kevan shepakta kolish baruch hu bebanim, but when Hashem granted her children, so then he said, I'm not going to divorce the mother of these children. And we will see this theme play out over the first three sons that she has. But and that, says the Ramban, is vayar elokim. Vayar elokim, Hashem saw the intentions that Yaakov had of divorcing Leah, and therefore he had a certain mercy on Leah. It's so confusing, make sure I get the names right, that she shouldn't be divorced, and therefore granted her, opened up her womb and granted her child. A harsh statement from the Ramban. The Ramban is saying it, what he saw from the words of Chazal, that Yaakov had complaints, and had intentions of divorcing her, the sages say. And Hashem saw that. Here the translation of Snua would be much harsher than the translation of Snua that the Radak offers. The Radak says, no, there was no hatred. Chas v'shalom. It's just that they were both loved. Just that the love for Rachel was so much greater than the love for Leah, it would appear in relation that she was almost hated, but there actually wasn't any discord or any antagonism between the two of them. That's how the Radak understood it. But Hashem saw that was embarrassing for her and granted her a child. The Ramban comes in a much harsher approach and says, Yaakov had complaints. She should have because she didn't want to, you know, ruin the whole wedding and as a kavod or out of fear for her father, but she needed to have at some point let Yaakov know that it was Leah. The fact that she did, and Yaakov had complaints. Now, he doesn't say that therefore the word snua literally is, he hated, but it's not Lochein son of Yaakov. He had complaints. It's a much harsher word. And then that which Hashem saw is not just the embarrassment of Leah. Hashem saw that Yaakov had intentions of actually divorcing her and granted her a child. That's the opening verse to this parsha. Harsh. Yeah.
Well, there's just so much going on here. I mean, he's just come from a situation where he deceived his father. He deceived his brother.
Correct.
And now this is happening to him.
The sages say that.
But I'm thinking that when Hashem sees, you know, it's as if he said, I had mercy on you, so now I will have mercy on Leah. And at that point, Yaakov could understand.
The sages and the Chazal and the Medrash say exactly, not exactly, say very similar to what you're saying. They say when they record a conversation that Yaakov actually confronts Leah and says, daughter, you are a deceiver, the daughter of a deceiver. Ramso bas ramai. Love undeceived me, you're deceiving me. And she says, Matza min esmi, you found your an appropriate match. Didn't you just deceive your father in terms of stealing the blessings? And then the Medrash continues how, but the Medrash picks up on that and actually records such a conversation. There's a lot here. This is literally scratching the surface. What there is, the Medrash, the level, the depth that the sages speak out in these little verses about the relationship between Yaakov and Leah and Rachel, and then we have the two maidservants in there, and how the 12 Shvatim were created. There's a lot going on. It's complex and deeper. I should have even said this in the beginning. This is just reading the text with some of the commentaries of the giants upon whom we stand, Rashi and the Ramban, how they approach it. But the Ramban does say on this verse what seems to be a pretty harsh, I don't know if it's an indictment of Yaakov, or he says it as it is. Yaakov had complaints. Leah deceived him, and that's how he says why she was disliked. And Hashem therefore saw that and granted her a child. Let's read how Leah then names her first three children, which will all stem off of this first introductory verse. 32, Lamed Beis, says the Torah, Vatahar Leah. You know, there was a Rebbe, a Shashiva, in Baltimore, Rabbi Feldman's father-in-law, Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg Zatzal. Whenever he quoted a pasuk, he didn't say what I just said, the Torah says. He used to always say, so Hashem says, and they would quote the verse. That's how he always used to quote. Whenever he quoted a pasuk, he never said it like I just said. It just struck me as I just said that. That's how he always says. So Hashem says, Vatar Leah Vatelet Ben. So Leah conceived and had a son, Vatikra Shmo Reuven. And she called his name Reuven. Ki Amra, for she said, Ki Ro'o Hashem Ba'oni, like we said from the previous verse, Hashem saw my affliction. Ki ata yevani ishi, Hashem saw my affliction, as we had in the previous verse, and now my husband will love me. So the name Reuven comes from the name Reu, to see. Hashem saw my affliction, and therefore now my husband will love me. Says the Svarno. Svarno, again, one of the classic commentators here in the Chumash, he writes as follows. What's Bo'ani saw my affliction? Shoyabali choishdani, my husband was suspect of me. Shehiskamti lahatosa, that I was involved in the plot to deceive him. Just like the Ramban had said previously. My husband felt that I was involved in this plot. Utsmuras hachshad, so whenever somebody is suspect, what's the halacha when a man is suspicious of his wife as being an infidel, of being unfaithful to him, Galacha v'sota, what's the blessing that Hashem gives to such a woman? She'll have children. Says the Svarno, because my husband was suspicious of me of being involved in this plot, Nosan hakel yusporach li zera. Therefore Hashem granted me a child, just like a sota. For this was all divine in nature, as we'll see numerous other sources are all going to point to that. The fact that Leah should become one of the wives of Yaakov was agreed to that was necessary. So Leah says, Hashem saw my affliction, just like the Sota who's pulled out by her husband and said, I'm suspicious of you for being an adulteress. If it's in fact unfounded, her blessing is that she will have many children. So says the Sforno, Leah was blessed with a child as well, for the suspicions that her husband had had against her, that really she was involved in this whole plot to make her way into this family. Rashi comments on a Medrash. Rashi adds another level. What's the meaning of Reuven? Rav Hoseinu Pirshu Rashi says, she said, Reu ma bein zet lezet. In other words, the word Reuven is a combination of two words. Reu, look, and Bain, what's the difference? So that she said, look at the difference between my son and the son of my father-in-law. My father-in-law is Yitzchak, and his other son was Esav. Look at the difference between my son and Esav, says Chazal, is quoted here by Rashi. Shemochar ha-bechoyra li-Yaakov. Esav took his prized possession and sold it to Yaakov because he wanted no part of the birthright. V'zeh, and my son, Lo machra li Yosef, didn't sell his younger brother Yosef. Reuven was the one who stopped the brothers from trying to kill Yosef. Yeah, Velo irir lava, no complaints on him. Not only did my son not sell, I brought that in too early. Because he was the one who was involved in the sale. In other words, he's the one who said, let's not kill him, but eventually was sold. But that's not the comparison. In other words, Esav was the firstborn, sold the rights of the firstborn to Yaakov. However, my son did not sell any rights of the firstborn to Yosef. Not only did he not sell anything, says Leah, but in fact, tried to save. In other words, Yosef was the firstborn of Rachel, the other of the two first primary wives of Yaakov. So unlike Esav, who sold the rights of the firstborn to Yaakov, my firstborn did not do anything similar to the firstborn of Rachel. Not only that, but he didn't try to do away with him. Yosef would have been the one son who would have vied for the rights of the firstborn from Reuven. Not only did we not sell him the rights of the firstborn, but he, in fact, was the one who was in charge of not having him killed, stopping the brothers from killing him, and instead having him sold down to Mitzrayim. Reu Bain. So that, Rashi says, is the sages. In other words, the word Reu is plural. And why the word Bain? In other words, if the way that the Torah describes it as, she named him Reuven just because Hashem saw, then it should have been in the singular, like, I don't know what it would have been, but Reuven. So the sages add another level. Not only is it because Hashem saw my affliction and therefore granted me a child, just like the Sota who was granted a child when she was suspected by her husband, so too, says Leah, this son will not be like Reu ma bein this to that. Look how she'll be different than Esav. Okay, that's the name, Reuven. Yeah.
It seems like the women in Yaakov's life have more nevuah than him. His mother saw better for him, where he seems to be questioning, going through this process and fearing, and his mother, like, she was on target. You're going to go because you're destined. This woman sees that she's destined and explains to him, look at the son, he's undoing all the, what happened between you and your brother. It seems like he has powerful women in his life.
I think that's an accurate comment that we find that the women surrounding Yaakov are given prophecies which he does not seem to have. Whether in the scheme of things they were greater prophets or lesser prophets, I certainly am not one to judge. But you are right in pointing out that it does seem in several instances they had certain prophecies that he didn't. They were all prophetess. That we'll see that the next Rashi is going to say that, or in two Rashis. Who was greater? Not for me to determine. I have no idea. All right, verse 32. Vatahar od. Now she has another child. She conceives again. Vatelid bein. Vatoymer. And she says, Ki shoma Hashem ki snuo anoichi. Hashem has heard that I am hated again. Therefore, he has granted me this one as well. Vatikra Shmo Shimon. Root of the word Shimon is Shoma, to hear. So says Leah, since Hashem has heard that I am hated, therefore he granted me this child and therefore names him Shimon. What's the obvious question on this?
Well, I'm wondering why here it says Hashem heard and before it said Hashem
saw. Excellent. That's number one. What happened? Verse number one, the first son, Reuven, followed up on the fact that Hashem saw that she was afflicted, saw that she was embarrassed, and therefore granted her a son. And here, Leah says, Hashem heard that I am hated. What's question number two? There should be another question on this, on the pasuk.
Who did she hear? Who did hear?
Okay, all following up on... Yeah. Along the line. Well, what, why did she name her first son Reuven? What was supposed to happen with the naming of the son Reuven?
It would correct.
Right? It says, the pasuk says, Ki atof, for now, yeah, vani ishi, my husband will love me. In other words, we had a problem. Leah was snua. Whether or not we translate that as simply not as loved, or we translate that as the Ramban seems to say, literally disliked. But the first son Reuven, Leah says, I'm calling him Reuven because now my husband will love me. Then the next verse says, Hashem has heard that I am still not loved. I'm still a snu. I'm still either disliked or actually not as loved. And therefore I have this son known as Shimon. So what happened between the birth of Reuven and the birth of Shimon that she still seems to be having this problem? So the Kli Yakar asks this question. The Kli Yakar is another, I'm quoting new sources today, other than just the Ramban and Maharal. The Kli Yakar, I didn't find a lot on the names. Kli Yakar is again printed in your standard Chumash, classical commentary. He asks this question, and it offers two approaches. The first, he says, is that when Leah says that now my husband will love me, ki svara, ki hi svara, she thought, now that I have given him children, how can it be possible that, he uses a beautiful language, how can it be that the well is disliked and its waters are so sweet? Meaning, how can it be that if my child, that which the well produces, the water, is so sweet, how can it be that the well itself, which is producing the water, will be disliked? So in her svara, her thought was, now my husband will love me. And therefore she said, I'm going to call him Reuven, Hashem saw my affliction, and now my husband will love me. However, she was then struck by the fact that she had a second child consecutively. Who should have had the second child? It should have been Rachel. So Leah is all convinced that now that I had the first child, my husband's finally going to love me. And then, lo and behold, who has the second child? She has another child. Says the Kli Yakar, an unbelievable insight. Leah said to herself, why would it be that I've been granted now a second son? It's been revealed before Hashem that my husband hasn't moved from his initial position. He hasn't changed his opinion of me. That's why it says, he Hashem heard. He alone heard, boichein libo, searching out his heart, v'shama kol dvarov she'im libo, hearing that which is in Yaakov's heart. Aval ani lo yet. I didn't know. I would have thought that I'm already loved at this point. I had a son. How can it be that the well would be bitter and the waters of the well are sweet? So if the waters of the well, i.e. my son, are sweet, certainly the well would be loved as well. But I see from the fact that I had the second child, Hashem must have heard that I'm hated. So how did she hear? Who'd she hear from? She didn't hear from anybody. She figured out, says the Kli Yakar, from the fact that she was granted a second consecutive child, Hashem heard what's going on in Yaakov's head. Hashem understood what's going on in Yaakov's heart. And I still must be a snua, and therefore I've been granted the second son, to whom she names Shimon. He offers a second approach to Kli Yakar. Penetrating insight. Penetrating it. Says the Kli Yakar, it's also possible that it was in fact true that when Reuven was born, he did love her, as often is the case. Says the Kli Yakar, however, whenever there is a relationship between two people, and the relationship is founded upon certain principles, and something happens, an external event not related to the two individuals or their relationship with each other, that event will only temporarily change the essence of their relationship. A couple that's having problems and think, though if they have a child, things will be better, and they are in fact right, immediately after having the child, things are better. That's not because their relationship has become enhanced, and it's not because something has inherently changed in the way that they treat or relate to one another. There's been an external event outside of their relationship, and it will make a difference. As Leah said, ki ato, for now, says the Kliyakar, now, and only now, my husband will love me, but eventually, things revert back to the way that they always were. Fascinating insight into the relationships of people. You can do all sorts of things. If you don't address the problem, the band-aid that you put over it eventually falls off and you're back to exactly the place where you started. So says the Kliyakar, therefore, only at the time of Reuven's birth was there actually that better relationship, but eventually it fell back to the exact same situation that it was, and therefore, she says, I am still loved. Now, that second approach doesn't address that kishama Hashem, doesn't address why this was different that Hashem heard as opposed to Hashem saw. He's not focusing on that. The first approach of the Kliyakar is focusing on that. First one was only a heard, Hashem heard, because no one else was able to hear that, and she only figured it out from the fact that she had the second child. This approach focuses on the fact that that initial love was soon forgotten over the course of time, and then it's only with the third child, as we'll see in a moment, that things permanently changed. Okay, but those are the first two children, Reuven and Shimon, both of whom Leah names after the fact that she was not loved. Reuven was Hashem saw my affliction. Shimon is Hashem saw that I am not loved. And then she has a third child, Pasuk Lamid Dalet. Vatahar Od, she conceived again, Vatelet Bein, she means now how a third consecutive child, Vatoymer. Ato hapam ilove ishi elai. Now, my husband will literally become attached to me. Ilave is from a word like when you were Malava the Malka, you escort the queen at the end of Shabbos from that word Malava Malka to be Malava the Mace. A levaya is called a escorting in which you accompany. So she says, right now, my husband will ki ilave. Ishi Eli, my husband literally will like escort with me or will become attached to me. Kiolatati lo shloshuvanim. Al Kain Krashimo, Levi, and therefore they called his name Levi from the root of Levaya, from the root of to escort, to become attached to them. Now that I've had three sons, my husband will certainly become attached to me. Why all of a sudden at three did she feel that she now had more of a claim on Yaakov? So Rashi here comments in the beginning of Pasuk Lamed Daled, Lefisha Imohos Nevios Hoyo. They were all prophetesses. They all had that divine prophecy ability within them. V'yoyd ois sheyud be'shvatim yoytzim Yaakov. They all knew that Yaakov was going to eventually have 12 shvatim. V'dal enoshim yisan. He had four wives. So they all were able to do the math. Four wives, 12 shvatim. Each one is supposed to have three children. Therefore, she says, now that I've had my third son, me'ata engel pischon pe'elai, he can't possibly have any complaints against me. How can he even complain that I'm not supposed to be his real wife? I have just bore him my full share. I've just had the three sons out of the 12 that I'm supposed to have. Sharei natalti kol chalki babano, I've now taken my entire chelek, my entire portion in sons, and therefore now my husband will cleave to me. The Kliyakar comments on this. You'll see Rashi is going to note this difference as well. Rashi is going to have a midrashic approach. But if you'll notice, who calls him Levi? How does the verse say this in verse 34? Therefore, he called his name Levi. Now, Art Scroll has a capital H. Let's leave it out for a moment. We'll see where Art Scroll got that from. The main thing, if you just look at the Hebrew even, the first two says Vatikra, which is a feminine form of, and she called. She called his name Shimon for Hashem saw my affliction. She called his name Reuven. Sorry, I said it backwards. She called his name Reuven, Hashem saw my affliction. She called his name Shimon, Hashem heard that I am hated. And Levi is Vikalkein Kara Shimo Levi. He called his name Levi. So the Kliyakar comments, Yaakov called this son Levi. Says the Kli Yakar, by the third child, Yaakov came around, following on his interpretation that even after the first two, he still hadn't accepted that this was a divinely ordained wife of his. He still had complaints that she hadn't told him who she was, and that the second child was still born out of hatred. It was only the type of hatred that Hashem saw. Nobody else picked up on. Hashem heard, as the Kli Yakar said, that I am still hated. No one, it was already at the point where any onlooker would say, everything is totally fine, we're beyond that. But Hashem knew that in his heart of hearts, he wasn't whole with it. Says the Kli Yakar, this third son, Yaakov was able to entirely internalize, this was what's supposed to be, this is a wife that I'm supposed to have, the fact that she didn't tell me is not her fault or her problem, this is a way that it was divinely ordained that I should have it. And therefore he named this child Levi, signifying, I will be Melava, I will escort and accompany and become entirely cleaved and attached to my wife Leah, and therefore Yaakov named his son Levi. That's the Kli Yakar's interpretation, which fits with the more simple reading of the text. Rashi quotes a Medrash, a Chazal, that goes a little bit deeper. Says Rashi, Alkein Krushmo Levi, Kulam Ksiv Batikro, all of them it says, and she called, naming the children through the mother. The Zekos of Bokra. So the simple explanation would be Yaakov did it. However, says Rashi, the Medrash, the Chazal, have a deeper interpretation. Shesholoch HaKodesh Baruch Hu Gavriel. Hashem sent the angel Gavriel. Veheviu Lefanav. And Gavriel took this child up to HaKodesh Baruch Hu, up to Hashem himself. Vekara lo shem zeh. Hashem named this child Levi. Vinosam lo choftal in matnois kahuna. And he sent him back down with the 24 gifts of the priesthood. As it says in Pirkei Avos, there are three crowns, the crown of Torah, the crown of Malchus, of kingship, and the crown of priesthood. The crown of priesthood comes together with 24 gifts, which is based on the 24 different gifts that the Jewish people give to the priests from when they tithe and when they bring a karban. There are 24 different specific gifts given to the Kohen. So Levi, of course, is the father of the tribe of both the Levim and the Kohanim. So the Medrash says that Hashem, so to speak, sent him down with the 24 gifts of Kahuna. Since Hashem sent him with gifts, he therefore named him Levi, signifying that he was escorted down, so to speak, with gifts. An explanation on our level, I'm not going to offer you. I'm just giving you what Rashi quotes from the sages, and that's where our scroll got the capital H from. Al Kain, therefore, he called him Levi. Our scroll goes with Rashi's midrashic interpretation that he is a capital H. Hashem called him Levi, signifying the gifts that he would be accompanied with. The most simple meaning of the pasuk is what Leah herself says. Now, my husband Yaakov will accompany me because I have given him his full three sons. And the Kli Yakar gives an explanation again that it would be Yaakov calling him Levi because Yaakov himself is stating, I will now be more of an accompaniment in full, total heart and mind with my wife Leah. I have seen now that she's got her full three sons. This is clearly divinely ordained, destined to be, and I will acknowledge that, so to speak, with that. One more interesting point on the name Levi. Rashi quotes on the phrase Al-Kain. Rashi says, every time you see the phrase Al-Kain, it implies Merube Be'uchlesin. It means an increase in population. Meaning from the phrase Kain Yirbu, Kain Yirbu V'Kain. Exactly, from the beginning of Shmos, when it says that the Jewish people will greatly increase, it uses the word Cain. According to the amount that they were afflicted, Cain yirbeh v'chein yifrotz. I forget exactly, I sort of quoted in here. Let's see if I can find that. Yeah, I understand. Okay. In any case, from the word Al-Kain always seems to imply that. Here it is. Cain yirbe v'chein yifrot. So the nation would increase and so it would burst forth. So since the Torah uses the word Cain yirbe v'chein yifrot, so the Chazal say, whenever you have that phrase, al-Cain, it's a reference to a large population. So when it says here by Levi, al-Cain, karosh, and Levi, here where they called his name Levi, it should have meant a large increase in population. Say, Chazal, quoted here by Rashi, the exception to that rule is here by Levi. Why was Levi not entitled to that meaning of the phrase al-Cain, that he should have an abundance of population? Says Rashi, because the Oron was Machlebohan, the Oron which was housed with Levi, that they were the ones in charge of carrying and transporting it, decreased their numbers. Says the Maharal, explaining what the sages mean, this is what Esav was afraid of. This is why Esav sold his Bechorah. Esav said, Anochi holech lamos, I'm going to die. Why do I need this Bechorah? Why do I need this rights of the birthright? Because Esav understood the rights of the birthright meant serving in the Beis HaMikdash. And when you're serving the Beis HaMikdash, you got heavy responsibilities, responsibilities that if you're not careful with, bring along a death penalty. So Esav says, I don't want it. Now, the firstborns eventually lost that right and it was given over to Levi following the Chet HaEgel, the sin of the golden calf. So the sages say, even though it says by Levi, al-Kain, which normally would imply an abundance of population, Levi never was privileged to see that because of the fact that they were the carriers of the Aron, and as such, were often decimated by that responsibility, and therefore did not actually see that increase. But that's just a little tidbit of information that Rashi throws in regarding Levi. Okay. One more son of Levi, of Leah here in the beginning. Vatahar Od, and then Leah has a fourth consecutive child, Vatelet Bain. Vatoymer, again, she names him Hapa'am Oida Es Hashem. This time, I will give thanks to Hashem. Al-Kain Kroshimo Yehuda. Therefore, she calls his name Yehuda Vata'am Oida Miledes. And at that point, she ceased from having children. Hapa'am Oida Es Hashem. This time, I will give thanks to Hashem. Calls his name Yehuda. The name Yehuda, of course, if you take out the Dalet in Yehuda, you have the Yud and the Hey and the Vav and the Hey, which is the name of Hashem that is not spoken. So the name Yehuda is compiled based on the actual name of Hashem. And that is why we are all privileged to be called Yehudim. We are all known as Jews because the name Yehuda comes from a place in which Leah says, this time I will give thanks to Hashem. Rashi quotes, why this time more than any other time? Rashi says, "Shenotalti yoiser mechalki." Now I have received even more than my portion, because I'm only, as Rashi said previously, was only entitled really to have three children, four wives, three children each. Now that I have given birth to my fourth son, this is above and beyond that which I am entitled to. May ata yeshli v'hotos, and that I need to give a special thanks, and therefore from Yehuda comes our name, that name Yehuda, again rooted in the name of Hashem, and with the concept of giving thanks is where we all stand as well. Last year I quoted a medrash, which I'm not going to spend the whole hour going through, but I'll just re-quote because it's a great little medrash. The medrash says on Leah, who was a ba'alas hodaya, Leah who was a person who gave thanks and naming her son Yehuda, gave birth also to children who were to be Ba'alei Hodaya, those who would give thanks. She had David HaMelech, came from Leah, descended from Yehuda, who says, Hodu La Hashem Kitov Ki B'Olam Chasdo. Pray, give thanks to Hashem, great is His kindness. She had Daniel, who also in Sefer Daniel, the book of Daniel, has a verse in Aramaic in which he says, basically in essence, Hodu La Hashem. And she has Yehuda, her actual son Yehuda, who also said, upon recognizing the truth that Tamar, and the incident of Yehuda and Tamar, was actually that he was the father of the child that she was carrying, Vayakir Yehuda, that he recognized that truth and said, Tzad Kavimeni, she recognized the truth and acknowledged that he in fact was the father of that child. And the Medrash seems to imply that his simple recognition of the truth of that fact was derived from the ability of Leah to be thankful. The ability of a person to say, Hodu La Hashem, to say, Hapam Odes Hashem, this time I'll give thanks. It's in thanking somebody that's derived the ability to acknowledge and recognize the truth, because that's that same trait within a person, to recognize the truth. That's a whole long shmooze. We had that last year. But it's worth just mentioning. Those are the first four children that Leah has. First three of which are directly associated with her status of being snua, of being either not as loved as the Radak learns or disliked as the Ramban learns. Reuven, Hashem saw my affliction. Shimon, Hashem heard my affliction. And finally, Levi, now my husband will attach himself to me, either named by Yaakov or named by Hashem himself, as Chazal seemed to imply. And then Yehuda, now that I've already had beyond what I can ask for, I've already beyond my three sons, that my husband is totally with me now, and then I've had a fourth son, that is the name Yehuda, this time I will give thanks to Hashem, and that is her fourth son. One last quick point, and then the very next pasuk says, Vateira Rachel kilo yoldo liyakov. Rachel saw that she had not yet had any children. Vatekane Rachel ba'asoso. And Rachel was jealous, envious of her sister. Rashi quotes, what does it mean that she was jealous? Kono b'ma'aseha hatoivim. She was envious of her kind and appropriate good deeds. Amra, she said, ilule shitzadka mimeni, if it weren't for the fact that she were more righteous than I, loizachsa labanim, she wouldn't have been zoicha to have had all these children. So her jealousy, says Rashi, as the sages say, was over the actions, the appropriate tzidkus, the righteousness of her sister Leah, who says Rachel to herself clearly was more righteous than I, that she's been so privileged to have all these children. The moral comments, it's impossible to have read it as a real jealousy that Rachel was having when she was jealous of her ma'asim toivim, which is fascinating after all that we've learned about how it seems that this was a blessing given to Leah because of the fact that she was hated. Rachel interpreted it as, she's clearly more righteous than I. I must be doing something more, because look at her actions, and she's getting all of the children. I never interpreted it as, you know, it's not my problem. It's just that she's, you know, she was hated. She interpreted and did something. She was jealous of her ma'as and tovim, of how righteous she was. That's why she was zeichet to have all these sons. All right, there's obviously eight more sons, but we got through four at least. All right, so good afternoon.